I will call this meeting of the Children and Families Committee to order. And Vice Chair Nelson, do you have a motion on the March 11th minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I have reviewed them, and I would move the minutes from March 11th.
Vice Chair Nelson moves the minutes from March 11th, 2025. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and the amendment, the minutes are adopted. Now, moving on, we will go to my bill. So we'll pass it off to the Venerable Vice Chair Nathan Nelson.
All right, thank you. Our the next item on our agenda is House File 2078, which would be referred to the General Register. Representative West, would you like to move your bill before the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will move House File 2078 to be referred to the General Register. And we had a DE1 amendment drafted and then neglected to submit it again. So, like my wife, everybody here can be very upset with my organizational lack of skill. So, when talking with Chair Katiza Batun, we found areas of agreement within the amendment, which are two provisions, the Child Care Center Parent Access Program, Section 2, and then Section 3, the immediate following section. So, what we will do here is I will move the DE1 amendment, and I'll move to divide the amendment between 7.13 and 7.12 and 7.13. We'll just ask nonpartisan staff to confirm that that is divisible there.
Ms. Mock.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the question was, is if it's divisible at page 7, line 12, correct? Yeah, and yes, it is.
Okay. So there is a motion to divide the amendment, and I think we'll work on the first part of this.
No, I'll work on the second part.
First. Second part first?
It gets more complicated. I will now move to divide the second part of the amendment at lines 14.2 and 14, between lines 14.2 and 14.3. So, and then take up the first part of that amendment, which would be the juicy middle of the bill.
Okay. Ms. Mock, if you would like to explain that or confirm that.
Mr. Chair and members, I can confirm that the amendment as divided can be further divided after page 14, line 2.
Okay. Chair West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so we will take the first part of the second division is what we are after, the Child Care Center Parent Access to Program and the Child Care Center Requirements for Furnishings, Equipments, and Materials. So these are two portions of modernization that have buy-in from the providers, and the department wrote them, so I assume they are supportive of them, and we'd like to get moving on them right away. I'll go more into that, but I believe I should recognize Chair Katiza Batun.
Chair Katiza Batun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So for clarity, members, we are going to be voting on sections 2 and sections 3 of the bill. It is the middle section of the DE1 amendment as divided. And just like Chair West mentioned, this is language from the department that we saw previously in conversations of the draft 2 licensing discussion, and that has approval from child care providers as well. So we're moving forward on this, and as it will be at the General Register, this we found common language, and the rest of the language can still be under consideration by the committee, but won't be moving with this proposal.
Okay, Chair West.
Thank you, Chair Katiza Batun. Thank you, Vice Chair Nelson. So I guess we'll go to a vote and then discuss it.
Okay, So we are going to be voting on the sections 2 and sections 3. As has been outlined, it's between 7. Representative Hicks.
We do have quorum.
Good question.
Good question. But
yes, we do.
7.13 and 14.3 are the two lines.
Yep, 7.13 and 14.3.
Or 2.
Or 14.2. That section of the bill will be looking to adopt. So all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion is carried. So now on to the, I guess it's the underlying bill. Now.
I will, withdraw the other parts of the amendments.
Okay.
And to the bills. So now, for those of you who saw House File 2078, the underlying bill is not, prior to being an amendment, is not particularly something I would want to support. But it's hard to get jackets these days, so I thought this is a great time to move forward on pieces of the modernization movement that we find agreement. And in particular, when I've been talking to childcare providers, in particular teachers, it's always the furnishings, well, the furnishing and equipment section, where they are obligated to keep all toys that are supposed to be in the room within access to children. And if anyone here has kids, you know you don't do that in your own house. You do not let your children have whatever they might be age appropriate to have. So it provides an exception for art products and music, I believe, so that when, let me just make sure I got that right so I'm not confusing anyone.
Recording in progress.
There we go. In 8.25 is what we're looking for in the DE1 amendment. So they must make age-appropriate materials available, but art materials and musical or rhythm instruments may be stored in locations not accessible to children, but still must be made available at least once a day. So that is really the key point, is imagine having to watch 8 toddlers or preschoolers, and then also not being able to stop them from maybe dumping out paint, playing instruments incessantly and viciously. It's, imagine being that parent, and we expect our childcare workers who are sadly underpaid to endure that under the current rules. It makes absolutely no sense. So this is something that we can make teachers' lives a little easier without any real cost to the state, which is a step in the right direction. I will make one additional comment about the rest of this rule. So it lists out all the furnishings that are required to be in a classroom. And one thing I want to bring up is when you list out things this prescriptively, you can have inspectors who are here for safety purposes when they inspect a childcare center spend their time counting the number of musical instruments in the room, counting the number of toys. Or that is not exactly a good use of their time. So in the future, I think it merits discussion for the rest of it. Then we have the first portion, which is the child care center parent access. So this just clarifies, which most, I can't imagine very many child care centers assert this right, but an enrolled child's parent or guardian must have access to the child at any time the child is in attendance at a child care center, unless, which this is an important unless, there's a court order or legal documentation that restricts access to the child. For obvious reasons, we need that caveat, but this makes it, I'm surprised this isn't how it is already, quite honestly. You'd assume you have access to your own child when they would put them in care. But that is something that came out of modernization that has broad support, and it's my belief and what I would like this committee to work on as we move forward in crafting a larger bill is that we look at modernization that they're working on the draft for next year, where they're going to take the final drafting materials and then present it, that they do what they can to make it we can make their lives easier for providers sooner rather than later by passing things like this. I don't see why we have to make them wait to be supported if we have buy-in all around. Now, there's a lot of parts of modernization we don't necessarily all agree on, and that those topics, sure, we should push those to next year, but I think we should actually thoroughly discuss them, but maybe not pass them. So it's of my mind, I would like to see a product of this committee as we work together to go through this modernization draft to find stuff that genuinely makes providers' lives easier and has buy-in from the department and the providers and move those forward. And that is the purpose of me bringing this bill and DE1 forward today. So, without further ado, that's all I got.
Okay. Do you have any public testimony you want to go to? Is there anyone that wants to testify on this? Okay, seeing none, let's go to member questions. Representative Hicks.
Thank you so much. Chairs. I do have a question about Section 2. It says a court order or other legal documentation. I just want to make sure from the department that in a situation where there is not a custody court order, so unmarried parents, mom has full physical legal custody, there's no court order in place, and maybe they're in the process of doing something, there's a court case pending. Just want to make sure that everyone's comfortable, the department's comfortable with that language, should there be like a CPS assessment so that the county doesn't have care, custody, and control, but there's an active assessment. Like, would this still make sure that the county's, there wouldn't be a concern about a parental kidnapping? I just want to like lock it down and make sure that there's no wiggle room there. Because I know when we're in an assessment, that's before we go to court. And so just sort of want to make sure this language encompasses all of that. Kind of looking at the department, trying to see if I see anybody.
Okay, Chair West.
Well, if the department would like to comment, they are welcome to. What I would say is I don't believe they're definitely not a guardian if they don't have custody. They're a parent, but if they don't have custody, I would consider the document that says they don't have custody would account as legal documentation.
Representative Hicks.
So there is no document. So the way that custody works in Minnesota, if parents aren't married, is that the mother has full physical and legal custody until a court decision is made. And so in many cases, when parents are not married and they're living together and cohabitating, it's never a problem until it's a problem. And so I just want to make sure that if it's a problem, that there's an issue, any kind of a custody concern in those spaces, that this language on both sides of that coin, right? So on the side of the coin of like where there isn't official documentation, but the father is actively involved and an equal parent, and on the flip side where there isn't official documentation, but maybe there's a child protection assessment where they haven't gone in front of a judge yet and we're in the assessment phase, but there are safety concerns, and maybe there's like a safety plan, which isn't a legal document, that we're not gonna be in a pickle. So this is just me looking at both sides of the coin and making sure that this language is strong enough. I don't actually know, Chair West. I'm not trying to be like difficult in any way. I genuinely just, those are things that, you know, as everyone in this room knows, I've been a foster parent for a long time. Those are things that actually come up. And sometimes our laws are not nuanced enough to sort of handle those things. And I want to make sure we get this right.
Chair West.
Thank you, Representative Hicks. Committee is exactly where we bring up these kinds of concerns, so there is no offense or anything taken. We're going to look at this language again before it even comes close to becoming law. What I would say is the two sides of the coin you mentioned, do. It's like we don't want to punish people who, until it's been determined that they shouldn't have custody. Now, maybe there's something we can refine in the documents you describe, but also you don't want to prevent somebody from having access who should have access until something proves otherwise. But if there's further clarification we can do to make sure the documents that you are talking about qualify, I think we can certainly, yeah, I have no problem with looking at that. Nobody wants people who shouldn't be near children to be near children.
Okay. Chair Katisa-Watun, I think, has some questions or comments.
Thank you. Thanks for that, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hicks, thank you for bringing this that concern forward. How I'm reading this language is that whether or not a parent or guardian has access to the child at any time is not necessarily the ability to remove the child from the premises. Like, the enrolling parent often can say, like, who can pick up their child. And so that would be, a point of further clarification with the department. And it's not seeming like anyone is here in the room with us today at this point in time. Do we want to phone a friend, Mr. Chair? Do we want to take up some of the other bills and see if we can? I don't know that there would be any issue with this language moving forward to the general register, but in the case that there is, was there any desire to further divide the amendment? I guess without further feedback from the department. I yield to you.
Is there, I guess I don't see anyone from the department here that I can see. I don't know if nonpartisan, I guess we do have somebody maybe. So
against their will.
Thank you, and if you would please introduce yourself for the record and then try to answer the question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ari Didion, Legislative Director for the DHS Office of Inspector General. We haven't had a lot of time to review this language, so I'm not sure if I could comment on if it's workable or not. So. And I unfortunately don't have any of my licensing staff here today, so. But we can certainly follow up and get more information on whether or not that language is workable.
Okay. Representative Hicks.
Thank you so much, Chairs. I'm open to however we want to do this, but if we're moving to the general register and we don't know whether or not this would protect a child who's in a CPS assessment, I think we should consider pausing until we can confirm that that's not going to be a problem. Because when we're in assessment, prior to investigation, there are no legal documents, that it's still confidential, that's usually a safety plan, which wouldn't necessarily be, you know, I'm very concerned that it, when CPS is in an assessment, is the most likely time for a parental kidnapping. And so we just need to be really sure.
Okay. Chair West.
Thank you, Representative Hicks. I think your concern is not, like, if it's still confidential, it's like, how do you even legislate that? But what I would say is the whole purpose of this is have an agreement. So we can just delete lines 7.13 to line 7.17 and move on with our day? So I'd move an oral amendment, delete lines 7.13 to 7.17. Thank you.
Ms. Mock.
Mr. Chair and members, so this language that's in this section 2 actually comes from the draft, the draft regulation modernization from DHS. It's in the language that they have put forth for the future regulations. And it, if you were to remove that everything on 715 after the comma, the language would actually not be necessary because currently, under rules, parents of enrolled children may visit the center anytime during operations. So what's being added in the draft regulations and what's been then put forth here is this, unless a court order or other legal documentation restricts access to the child.
Chair Katisa-Watun.
Thank you, Ms. Mock. And so my understanding of your explanation there, that this actually strengthens protections, existing protections. So if that's the case, I feel okay about including it. If you are also
okay. I withdraw
my
amendment.
All right.
Teamwork makes the dream work.
But all right, Chair West.
Because my goal is to torture the committee legislative assistant as much as possible, I did move the oral amendment. So, oh, wait, oh, no, or I didn't. Never mind, I got the laser eyes. So, but the purpose of this bill, is more to introduce the conversation and to get a child care bill onto the general register, but is to introduce the concept of let's make their lives easier where we can, let's not make them wait if we don't have to.
Okay, well, thank you. Is there any further discussion on this? Any further questions? Seeing none, Chair West, do you have want to renew your motion?
I'll renew my motion to refer House File 2078 as amended to the General Register.
Okay, there's been a motion to Chair West renews his motion to send House File 2078 to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? It's carried.
Like pulling teeth.
All right. Maybe we'll go smoother after this one now. So, so thank you, and Chair West will be coming back to the gavel, and the next bill is up.
All right. So we have House File 777 coming up. But one little tidbit I'd like to offer the audience is prior to being a legislator, I was a committee legislative assistant and would have hated every single minute of that. So that's where that joke came from. All right, Representative Coulter, I assume you'd love to move your bill.
I would love to move my bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Go right ahead.
And I will start off by saying I recall that you requested food on food day, and I had every intention to bring in something and then forgot on the way in. So I will make it up to the committee, I promise.
If you didn't have one of my constituents as your testifier, you would have.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Oh, excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And House File 777 is a bipartisan bill, growing more bipartisan every day. In fact, just today, Representative Davids was added as a co-author to provide funding for food shelves. We know, obviously, that food insecurity and hunger continue to be on the rise in Minnesota. Excuse me. In 2024, Minnesotans made nearly 9 visits to food shelves, 1.4 million more than in 2023. And more than double the number of visits that happened in 2021. Combination of higher grocery prices and the end of emergency SNAP benefits has put many more Minnesotans into a difficult position. Food shelves across our state do incredible work, but they simply don't have the resources needed to keep up. And when that happens, people go hungry. Nearly half of food shelves in this state came from children and seniors. So House File 777 would put $8 million total, $4 million each year in the biennium, towards supporting food shelves across our state so that they can continue helping Minnesotans who need it the most. And with that, I will gladly turn things over to my testifiers.
All right, we'll go to the list of testifiers, starting with Reverend Dr. Al Garacki, Boulevard. Representative Olson. Dr. Garacki, good to see you.
Yeah.
Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Well, thank you so much. I'm Al Garacki, and I'm a pastor of Hope Church, but prior to being a pastor, I was a business owner, and I called into the ministry, and I'm like going, God, what are you doing? And then we found out that, you know, because I love the business world, and then things got bad with the economy, and then so we started food shelves, and we started a 501c3 humanitarian organization called Hope for the Community, and we have 7 food shelf locations in the Twin Cities area, Chair West has served at our Blaine location. He's a very generous man. Thank you. And we have a mass distribution site in Blaine, Elko and Newmarket. So those are two mass distribution sites north and south of the Twin Cities. And then we are also in Anoka Technical College. We are at Normandale Community College. We are at Coon Rapids Middle School. And we are at Anoka Ramsey Community College and St. Cloud State University. And you were right to read off those statistics because every year since our food shelves have been operating, we've had great increases. Last year, with all seven food shelves in operation, we served 96,000 households, 298,000 people in those households, 2.3 million pounds of groceries. That is to give you, you know, you're throwing numbers around, but that's like 80 semi-trucks filled with food. And so the need continues to get greater and greater every year, and we're humbled to be a part of it. But in particular, talking about this bill, HF 777, in particular, food shelves throughout the state rely on it. Without it, the food shelves will not be able to serve the people of Minnesota in the way that they need it. The need continues to get great. We believe that, you know, I'm kind of a glasses half full guy. I'm a person of faith. So, but I also understand that it might get a little bit darker before it gets better. And so this year we view it as a very crucial year. And I just want to encourage everybody, you know, we're talking about food shelves and fighting hunger insecurity, but food shelves are incredibly effective in battling hunger insecurity, okay? Even over government agencies, et cetera. And so let me tout that because this bill is about $8 million. I mentioned we distributed 2.3 million pounds. If you take a $5 conservative multiplication of that 2.3 million pounds, last year just one food shelf distributed $11 million into the Twin Cities area. And there are 400 plus other food shelves that can do the exact same thing. So I would just implore you to look at this bill, and I would tell you this is something that the food shelves need. And I'm a pastor, so I'm going to tell you a quick story, okay? Some of you guys are super young. Some of you guys are a little bit more.
15 seconds. So a little actually, more. You're already over.
Your I'm limit. Over?
Yeah.
Well, here's the deal. If you remember Emmitt Smith, Chair West, he played for the Dallas Cowboys, and he dislocates his shoulder against the Giants in 1992, and he said, put me in. So he goes in. He tells quarterback Troy Aikman, give me the ball with the dislocated shoulder. Emmitt Smith goes crazy, scores a few touchdowns, 168 yards rushing, 61 yards receiving. And that's what I would throw it to you guys. Give us the ball with the food shelves. We will serve the people of Minnesota with dignity and give them hope. Thank you. I'm glad I was able to be here.
Thank you, Dr. Garacki. Unfortunately, I'm quite biased. He's a constituent, so I had to indulge him. So, next on the list is Dom Corbell. And you'll have to let me know if you live in Blaine, Ham Lake, or Columbus.
No, I don't. So I'm Dom Corbell, Executive Director of Community Pathways of Steele County, located in the great city of Owatonna. I've been in this role for 3 years, and about 30 days into this role, someone said something to me that has guided everything I have done since. I sat down with the shopper who was registering, and I was trying to get her a bunch of resources above and beyond just food, and she stopped me dead in my tracks, and she said, Dom, you need to understand something about hunger. Hunger is paralyzing, and until I take the worry of food off the list for my family, nothing else matters. You can give me all the ideas you want. Until hunger isn't an issue for my family, nothing else matters. And I thought about that, and I've rephrased that in my head of battling hunger and taking the worry of hunger away for those we serve is about creating stability. And when we create stability in people's lives, that leads to mobility and change and eventually prosperity. But it only happens in that order. House File 777 is a bigger picture file than just the individuals we serve. It's about creating stability for us as food shelves. This is critical, flexible funding that guarantees we have the opportunity to sit in front of those we serve and provide that stability for them. It's flexible funding, and we can use it in the ways that our food shelf needs to. I know I can tell you in Steele County at Community Pathways, it goes straight to our food budget. That's how we choose to use it. Our food budget this past year was $420,000 to cover the need in Owatonna. It's also flexible in the regards to it is a fair allocation across the state. There's a formula used by the food group and Hunger Solutions that everybody gets what they need based on the usage their food shelf has. So my ask of you is very simple. Let's not just get this bill, House File 777, out of committee today. This is a bipartisan bill, as Representative Coulter said, bipartisan by the day growing, which is super exciting in the work I do. Let's get it through committee. Let's get it to the floor, and let's get it voted on so that we can do the work we do. Give us the stability needed to provide stability for those we serve. And never forget, until we do, hunger is paralyzing, and you have the power to help us overcome that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Corbell. We have a remote testifier for number three, Rick Kocharek.
Yes, hello. My name is Rick Kocharek. I work at a food shelf at Prism Golden Valley, and I just want to share my experience working and using a food shelf over my life. As a child, I remember using a food shelf and how just a few bags of groceries would make a big difference since we had a larger family. My mom and my stepfather would often have us eat first to make sure we wouldn't go to bed hungry, and they would only eat maybe once a day, if that. When I had my son, I started using SNAP benefits, and that still wasn't enough to support my family there, so I started going back to food shelves to make sure my family had healthy and stable food to eat. And then during COVID, when the pandemic came, my son's mother lost her job as she was in the service industry, and I was a commission job, so I lost a lot of income during that as well. So I went to the local farmer's market to use my SNAP benefits and Market Bucks, and that's where I discovered Prism here in Golden Valley. I use the food shelf in Prism to help, you know, my family and my son have healthy food at the end of the day. And I really liked Prism and what they stood for and how welcoming everybody is there. It's more like a family experience than anything else. So I started volunteering in summer of 2023. After volunteering for a few months, I was offered a job, and I just wanted to make sure, you know, people had a great experience when they come through our food shelf, and how important it is for, you know, children to have that experience as well. I remember as a kid feeling ashamed and being like made fun of for not having enough food and things like that. So I just want to make sure everybody feels safe, welcomed, and respected here at Prism. And other than that, to speak on some numbers here at Prism, you know, we do about 125 people on average a day, with about 20 new intakes every day. So the need is very, very important. And, you know, hopefully we can get this out there and get this handled. And thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Kocharek. Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify today on House File 777? Seeing none, I'll close public testimony and go to member questions. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's not in any question in particular, but I just wanted to make a comment on Representative Coulter's bill here that I significantly appreciate. You know, yesterday I made a comment about efficiency and the government using its money the right way to get the most benefit. And I really appreciate the fact that of these millions of dollars that are going to be sent to these food shelves, 96% of the appropriation is going directly to food shelves, and the commissioner only gets to use 1.8% of those funds. So I really appreciate that. I think that when state dollars are being utilized for a purpose, the more we can send it directly to that purpose, the better. And so that's a big deal to me. I looked up some of these food shelves because they're 990s, they're all available online. And, you know, I ran into one food shelf that has $3.2 million worth of goods and revenue that they have to report, and they provide precisely $0 worth of payments to their volunteers. So I think that's huge. You know, $3.2 million straight to the people, and that's the point of these food shelves. And I would also kind of make a note that I looked at a couple other nonprofits, and their numbers are not $0 in income, and in some cases they're rather large. So I think that this in particular is a wonderful thing. So thank you so much for bringing that forward.
Any other member discussion? Representative Coulter, why don't you close us out?
Well, thank you. Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Olson, for those comments. I obviously agree them, with them entirely. And I actually had the opportunity to visit Veet a few weeks ago. It's the largest food shelf in the Twin Cities area and is located right in my district. And you, when you do that, I actually really would encourage every member of this committee to find a food shelf and visit. You see the need. You see the impact that these dollars have on all of our communities across the state, and it really is pretty remarkable. I would just, you know, close by saying I think what we all know, which is that everything in life, school, work, family, and community life is harder when we're hungry, and it's easier when our neighbors aren't. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Coulter. And the bill will be laid over for possible inclusion in a later omnibus bill. Next on the list, who should I say? Representative Myers, House File 841. Okay. All right. I will move House File 841 to be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Right.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Myers. Thank you, members, for having me today. You know, what you're eating is some cookies from Cub Food. And, you know, for about the last 10 years, every Friday morning, I go to drop my kids off and I do a food rescue from Cub Foods. I'm part of a group called the West Tonka Food Shelf. And, you know, food insecurity and giving back to my community is something that's been really important to me. And it's instrumental with the dollars that we get either one time or maybe or put on the base. But I think we've all kind of heard, or you will continue to hear a lot about the statistics and the numbers, the impacts, and the numbers are pretty staggering. You know, I do support, you know, long-term funding, but I'm bringing this bill forward as, you know, one-time emergency food shelf funding. And that is, you know, for several reasons. I mean, I think we all want to get something over the line. We don't know what, you know, the budget's going to be, what it looks like. And so I know there were other bills that you guys are going to be hearing, one you already heard, but I think this is a good opportunity. This is bipartisan. Representative Keeler, Coulter, as well as Representative Wayne Johnson are on it. And I think I do have one testifier available.
Yes, we have Michelle Bottenfield, remote. Ms. Bottenfield, you are still on.
I'm here. I'm executive director of West Tonka Food Shelf. My name is Michelle Bottenfield. I appreciate being able to share with you some of our experiences here at West Tonka Food Shelf. I have been the director for almost 6 years. I've been involved with our organization for 12. Everything from running the counter and helping our patrons to rescuing food rescue every Saturday with my husband, and then buying prior to becoming the director. In 2019, we distributed 720,000 pounds of food to 732 families. In 2024, that increased to 4,400 families, and we distributed just shy of 1.5 million pounds of food. We have 169 passionate volunteers from the top down, from our board. We're all boots on the ground here. It is just a bare bones operation. We were able to distribute the nearly 1.5 million pounds of food last year with the help of food rescue. We were able to do that on about just shy of $500,000. which is just says so much about what everybody is doing here. And we had 13,000 unique individuals. The sad statistic of that is that in 2023, we were sitting at about 33% of our patrons as children, and in 2024, that increased to 42%. We are trying to meet the substantial increase in need, and it is getting harder and harder to do, especially with our limited space. Approximately with the removal pre-pandemic, there was a removal of the traditional territories. We had a local food shelf in Maple Plain that closed in 2020 that brought in more patrons. With those, with the change in the territories and being a, people being able to access their food shelves of choice, we have seen a large increase of patrons coming from the urban areas. I think about 65% of our patrons are outside of our
normal.
Sorry
to interrupt, but if you can wrap up your testimony.
So I just want to share with you how badly this bill is needed for our community and beyond. And I appreciate you taking the time to listen to my testimony today. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bottenfield. Is there any other member of the public who wishes to testify on House File 841? Seeing no one, I will close public testimony and move on to member questions. Chair Katisa Watu.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Myers, for bringing this forward. I think one of the really helpful things when we talk about hunger in this committee is that we have a really strong breakdown of members from both metro cities, suburban cities, and greater Minnesota. Hunger is not something that stops at our district borders. We all have neighbors who are experiencing this. Some of us have experienced hunger challenges in the past. I'm hopeful that you have a blank appropriation before us today, and I think moving on to ways and means, I'm curious if you have had any further conversation on what that dollar amount might look like. I would like to talk about that before this committee, before we send it on. So I'm just curious where your head is at on that.
Representative Myers.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative, for the question. You know, it is something that I'm trying to work with and listen to local food shelves in my area. Representative Keeler and I just had a conversation about this yesterday because I'm open to that number, but we know we've got to talk to our partners and the boots on the ground. You know, I am open to feedback if that's a $3-4 million appropriation, something like that. I know, you know, last year we co-authored a $5 million one-time funding. Again, trying to be responsible. And again, seeing those other bills like Representative Coulter's to give this as an option and opportunity. So any feedback is welcome.
Chair Katisa Watu.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that. I know that this area is a passion of yours and that you serve on the board of your local food shelf. I think that to the extent, is the idea that this bill would potentially like move as a standalone emergency proposal as opposed to being a part of the children and families budget as a whole, to the extent that we're going to have funding that we could dedicate to ongoing investments in this area?
Representative Myers.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative. Again, just laying it out there, I'm very open to if this wants to be included or if this wants to be a standalone. Again, I don't know where this committee and where we're going to fall when it comes to the budget for ongoing. I know there's some big asks, you know, again, trying to put something out there that no matter what, we can get across the line. And I think this is kind of the lower end of what, you know, the asks are.
Chair Katisa Watu.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I have a little bit of concern letting the fine folks on Ways and Means, including the chair and myself, make such an important determination when this is a huge part of the conversation and our jurisdiction here in this committee. So that is my hesitation. But I appreciate you bringing it forward. I think it's really important. I just want to make sure that this isn't in lieu of potentially other more ongoing or permanent investments in this area.
Representative Myers.
Yeah. And thank you, Chair. And just to add to that, I mean, this could be a parallel track bill. Again, just and I appreciate you pointing that out. You know, parallel tracks giving us options and opportunities, I think, are important.
Any other members' questions? Seeing none, I will renew my motion that House File 841 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. You're on your way to Ways and Means. Yes, thank you for the cookies. Now, our very own Representative Turbo Lightning, House File 1112, Representative Hemmingson-Yeager. And if you ever want me to stop calling you that, you are welcome to tell me to.
It's all good. I've been calling.
Okay. I think it's hilarious.
All right.
Go ahead and introduce your bill.
Thank you. Thank you, chairs. Thank you for the time. So I would just first like to echo kind of everything that's already been said. All the stats, all my stats were consistent with the testifiers before us. So these are good stats, although scary stats, because we have a lot of hunger. We have a lot of need, and the need is growing. On a personal note, I actually fear that it's going to get even worse. You know, people in my district are worried about layoffs that they see at the federal level. We're worried about economic downturn. So it's really important that we have this conversation, and I thank you for the time today. I would like to kind of go up one level from food shelves and start talking about food banks, another integral part of the hunger relief ecosystem. These food banks are kind of the backbone of the ecosystem, using their large purchasing power to source and distribute most of the food available at food shelves, as well as food distribution programs throughout the state, kind of like a wholesaler. Food shelves, food pantries, and food distribution programs serve Minnesotans experiencing food insecurity by providing food to the community through a variety of direct service models. There's 489 food shelves, mobile and tribal programs that all participate in what's called the Emergency Food Assistance Program, TFAP, throughout Minnesota. So that's kind of an introduction. So this particular bill, House File 1112, would establish a regional food bank grant program with DCYF, appropriating $10 million beginning in fiscal year 26 to kind of start that investment, that holistic approach, and the serious approach that we need going forward. It would be divided up between the six food banks in Minnesota. So I'm not sure, there might be a map in your materials, but they include Channel 1 down in Rochester, Great Plains in Fargo-Moorhead, North Country in East Grand Forks, Second Harvest Heartland in Brooklyn Park, Second Harvest Northland in Duluth, and then the food group in New Hope. So again, throughout the state, geographic, urban, suburban, greater Minnesota. I would also like to point out, too, that what I like about this bill is that it specifies the allowable use of funds. So if you look at 1.19 to 1.21. And then later on, being a good stewards of taxpayer money, it also specifies reporting. So there must be documented purchases and expenditures. And then later on, should the commissioner find something that is not in alignment, they can actually deem the expense ineligible, and then that expense must be repaid. So I just kind of wanted to go through the bill a little bit. And I also appreciate, too, that the tribal neighbors are called out, specifically in the language, because of the federal tax code actually makes it difficult for them to participate unless they formed a 501c3. So the fact that we've actually included them in this language is much more inclusive, and again, taking that whole statewide community approach. So I'll stop talking because you probably want to hear the testifiers by now, so thank you.
Would you like to move your bill?
I would.
Representative Yeager, Hemmingson-Yeager moves to lay over House File 1112. We move to public testimony. Allison O'Toole. Please introduce yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Chair West and committee members. I'm Allison O'Toole, the proud CEO of Second Harvest Heartland. Thanks for having me today. We are the largest hunger relief organization in the Midwest and the third largest food bank in the country. Our service area includes 41 counties in Minnesota, 18 in Western Wisconsin. Last year, we delivered nearly 170 million pounds of food to our neighbors in need and to a network of more than 1,000 food shelves and distribution partners. That's an increase of over 15% from the prior year. I'm here today because Minnesota is in a hunger crisis and we need your help. Our recent statewide hunger study found that 1 in 5 Minnesota households are food insecure, and 30% of our state is uncertain they'll be able to afford groceries in the next year. Additionally, Minnesotans visited food shelves 9 million times in 2024, a near doubling over the last 2 years. This growth is unsustainable. The root causes of this rise in hunger go beyond access to food. Simply stated, people can't afford their lives right now with rising costs in housing, childcare, energy, and more. Minnesota is fortunate to have a strong statewide hunger relief network. And at Second Harvest Heartland, we're able to stretch a dollar further than anyone thanks to our own purchasing power, which benefits our food bank partners across the state, and we act with urgency to meet the need. Right now, the state provides no direct funding to food banks, despite the critical role we play. This bill, House File 1112, would address that by providing $10 million in funding to be split among the 6 food banks serving Minnesota and participating tribal nations, funding which would be used exclusively for sourcing and distribution of food. Importantly, this funding would have an outsized benefit for food banks in greater Minnesota, where the need is equally high and resources harder to come by. To be clear, the need is much greater than this ask, but understanding the challenges you face in balancing the budget now and into the future, we believe this is both meaningful and reasonable. And I encourage the committee's strong support of this bill as well as the others being heard here today. Now is the time to come together and strengthen, not cut, these programs and policies that will help us end hunger in our state. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. O'Toole. Next on the list is Jessica Francis. The next person seems to be remote. Oh. Thank you for coming down. Please introduce yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Committee Chair West and House Committee members, my name is Jessica Francis, and I'm the Executive Director of Open Covered Food Shelf. We have locations in Oakdale and Maplewood, and we serve people from across the East Metro and beyond. We distributed more than 6 million pounds of food to our community last year. About 2.2 million pounds of that food was food that we rescued directly from retailers. But the majority of the remaining pounds of food came from Second Harvest Heartland. I'm proud to be here alongside Representative Hemmingson-Yeager in support of the regional food bank grants. Food shelves like ours are strained, as you've been hearing throughout the hearing, and trying hard to meet our community's needs while also keeping our own expenses on track. And we're committed to making sure that the food that we're providing to our shoppers is the items that they tell us that they need most. So that's things like milk and meat and fresh produce and other essentials. Those are the items that are most expensive at the grocery store, and when there's an unexpected car repair or a big medical bill comes up, those are the first things to go. So the regional food bank grant helps food banks keep those essential items in stock.
We have a volunteer named Sue who orders all of the food for our food shelf. That's 6 million pounds. She's got it all in her head, and she's ordering all of that food. And so when she is doing that ordering and she sees things like ground beef and eggs, which are items that were purchased through last year's appropriation for the food bank grant, when she sees those hit the inventory list, I think I can hear her cheering from across the building. It makes a huge difference for us, and we hear from shoppers what a difference it makes for them. One of our recent shoppers, Annabelle, recently shared this with us. She said, "It's so nice that there's produce and fresh salads and fruit. There was a day that I cried because there were eggs, which I had been wanting for so long and I couldn't afford. The impact that the food has made on me is immense." So I just want to say thank you for the funding that was approved for last year to support these food bank grants. The new funding that's requested in this bill is just essential for food shelves in our effort to keep meeting the increasing need. So thank you so much for your consideration.
Thank you for your testimony. Now, next is Virginia Witherspoon, who is remote.
Hello. Hopefully you can hear me. Thank you, Chair West. I'm Virginia Witherspoon, Executive Director of Channel One Food Bank in Rochester. Channel One serves 13 counties. Every place we serve is rural other than the city of Rochester. And we're facing a hunger crisis in Southeast Minnesota. In our region, Channel One distributed 18.9 million pounds of food for calendar year 2024. This is an increase of 35% year over year. And thank goodness, because the increase in need is staggering. Looking back to January 2022, we had about 15,000 shopping visits per month in the region. Fast forward 3 years to present, and it's about 35,000. Channel One runs a food bank and the largest food shelf outside the metro area. 25% of our shoppers in Rochester are driving in from outside Olmsted County for food. Many of those are driving 45 minutes to an hour. Why are they doing that? Because the need is so great across the area that they can't get enough food in their communities. We serve about 10,000 household visits per month. So that's 2,500 times that people drive into Olmsted County for groceries. The February shopping experience at the Channel One food shelf wasn't great. For the first time in 2 years, we served less than 500,000 pounds of food in a month. And this is not because the need is going down. This is because there is not enough food in the food bank. Between this February and last February, the weight of inventory on hand fell 59%, or 714,000 pounds. And why is that? Food donations are down, the cost of food is rising, and the need is soaring. We're already making hard choices. We're not buying eggs, and we're rationing milk for the region. If it were not for the one-time funding from the legislature last year, we would not have enough food right now in our food bank. And without funding from the state this year, by fall, people will be standing in line for food in rural Minnesota, and we will be turning them away. Thank you so much for considering this funding. It's essential to make sure that rural Minnesotans don't go hungry.
Thank you for your testimony. And last on the list, we have President Robert Larson, who is also remote.
Hello, Chair West, members of the committee. Koto name is Tatanka Ichaptata. I'm the Itancha Chanshiapi. Robert Larson is my English name. Most folks call me Deuce. I am testifying in capacity as the president of the Lower Sioux Indian Community in the state of Minnesota. The Lower Sioux Indian Community in the state of Minnesota, a sovereign and federally recognized Indian tribe, supports House File 1112. This bill includes funding support to assist regional food banks and federally recognized Indian tribes to purchase, transport, and coordinate distribution of food to those in need. One of the community's priorities in our strategic plan was to address food needs. So in 2020, the community, along with Jackpot Junction Casino Hotel, coordinated with a nonprofit organization for food packaging distributions available to anyone that needed it. In 2021, the community opened a food pantry building to address these hungers. In 2024, the community's food pantry averaged 1,080 household visits per month, and this includes an average of 1,993 individuals per month. Our food pantry helps serve the hunger needs of individuals and households, regardless if they're from our community or not. Having additional funding would support the community's efforts to provide food assistance to those who need it. I urge the committee to support House File 1112 that helps address hunger. Appreciate your time on this important issue. Kadamia, thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. That ends the list. Are there any members of the public who would like to testify on this bill? Seeing none, I'll close public testimony and move on to member questions. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Same kind of conversation when we're talking about food shelves, when we're talking about food banks, when we're talking about nonprofits in general. It's really important to kind of investigate who we're sending state dollars to and how those state dollars are being used. An example, I was in the Transportation Committee a couple weeks ago. We had a nonprofit that came and asked for state dollars, and I looked at their 990, and their 990 said that they got $1.8 million from the state of Minnesota, and they got 300 and some thousand dollars in private donations. So if you look at it, about 85% of their funding was coming from the state of Minnesota and only 15% from the community that they claimed was so supportive of them. And then you look at the wages that they're paying out, and they were paying out $400,000 worth of wages. So they were taking state dollars and they were paying their wages. They weren't doing the nonprofit mission. And so I think it's really important as we go forward and whenever we are talking about nonprofits to look at how they're utilizing their funds, not only how much state dollars we're giving, but how much state dollars are using for alternate sources. So I appreciate the fact that this bill specifically outlines how this money can be utilized. Kind of wanted to give a shout out to the Channel One Food Bank, which is services my neck of the woods, because they actually come in at the lowest amount of wages paid for profit made, for revenue brought in, excuse me. So Channel One brought in something like $18.7 million worth of food and donations. Their wages to revenue is 0.0062, which is about a half a percentage point. So that's super awesome. Another shout out, I think, goes to Open Cupboard, $13 million, and wages were 0.0094, so less than 1% of that nonprofit goes towards wages. So those are the two that I want to commend for a great job ensuring that that you're utilizing the money that you're being given as your nonprofit and really truly pursuing the mission that you're given. That's not to say others don't deserve one either, but those are the math numbers that I brought in, and they're significantly under the 1.8 that we're telling the administration that they can take for the food banks. So there you go. We got nonprofits doing better than food banks, right?
Food shelves.
Yeah, I know. The department's taking the 1.8 out of yours.
Yeah.
Right. So it's less than that. So that's what I'm trying to say. That's what I'm trying to say. So thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Representative Sensimura.
Chair, could I comment?
Representative Hemingway.
Thank you. Just want to say thank you, Representative Olson. Open Cupboard is the closest food shelf to my district, too. So.
That's
okay. You do that a lot to me. No, I'm kidding. just want to say I appreciate the shout out to Open Cupboard as they're the shelf that is closest to my district and serves my district. So thank you.
Mr. Berg, we got a clarification here.
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to correct something that was just said. The 1.8 is not going to the department, it's going to Hunger Solutions, which is rather.
Representative Olson.
Yes.
Well, that's good too. All right.
Representative Hemingway-Zegiaker.
Thank you. Good.
Representative Sensimura.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Olson. Just want to comment a little about that. I think I agree with you. We should be really thinking about how we're giving money to nonprofits, what the salaries are. I think we should all look at that, and that's all public information, so that there are things that we can look at. I do think, though, I guess I just have a little bit of an issue with, like, we want to give money to the organization that pays the lowest wages. I think that that's, like, one piece of a picture. I don't think that's the whole piece, right? Let's say that it's an organization that does, you know, food relief, but also provides wraparound services. I would assume that that organization spends more on wages because those employees are giving out services. Some organizations that are just doing food shelves, maybe we want to look to lower wages, but I just think it's one piece of the picture, and I think it's a little bit incomplete. If we really want to talk about how do we want to direct the department to give out, you know, funding to the best nonprofits, I just think there might be multiple factors to look at than just what are wages. I think that's one piece of the puzzle. And for example, I would much rather give to an organization that is spreading out wages throughout many workers, maybe than, you know, putting it into one worker. So those are some of the things that I would be thinking about. Thank you.
Representative Olson.
Perfect. Thank you. I'd like to respond. I think that we're on very similar lines. We're just maybe not crossing perfectly. My comment was towards the percentages, which I find like efficiency-wise. So I wouldn't care if you paid your if someone got paid $1 million, if they were bringing in hundreds of millions of dollars worth of benefit, the percentage would be down. The efficiency of that nonprofit is what I'm looking for, not necessarily trying to call someone out for making hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars. I want to see the most bang for our buck, which in my mind is the efficiency of the program, the percentages of revenue versus expenses that include wages. Like, I want to see the good. The good is what I want to see. So I hope that clarifies, because I think we're on very similar trajectories.
Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chair, I have a question for actually Ms. O'Toole, I believe. She could. So as you approach the testifying table, just a question regarding the Emergency Food Assistance Program, and I see that it's a 100% federal program, and we receive money from the federal government. And I was just wondering, what do you have a number on that?
Ms. O'Toole.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald. Are you talking about the TFAP program?
Correct.
So I don't, I will circle back because I don't want to misstate numbers. I don't have the specific numbers there. We do receive about, and the entire network probably receives, we receive less than 10% of our budget in federal funding. And so if you want a breakdown of that, I'm happy to follow up with the committee on that. I don't have that right now. And TFAP, just maybe I can explain too. TFAP is food that comes in from the federal government, so commodities, canned goods, some proteins, et cetera, that the Hunger Relief Network relies on.
Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chair, yes, the good news is it's American-grown USDA food for sure that comes in, and probably comes in through the grocery stores, I would recall in our communities. No, that would be important numbers, I think, to look at, because in that funding also is supposed to be administration, storage, and distribution of the food, and that goes to our local agencies. So there's a portion of that money that goes and purchases the food for the food shelves, and then a portion for administration, storage, and distribution locally to our food shelves. So I think that'd be an important thing to recall and for us to know as we decide on these important bills. Last Friday, myself and Senator Anderson and the Wright County Commissioners were out at Cub Foods, and now this is my 15th year, to doing a food shelf drive. We have 90 seconds to fill as many grocery carts and put in, and unfortunately, the Commissioners of Wright County won. They beat us in weight and in the dollar amounts, but we did raise over $11,000 worth of food and donations to the food shelves of Buffalo, Delano, my hometown, and then the Wright County Food Shelf Program. And then the Wright County Dairy Association donated $3,000, $1,500 to Delano's food shelf and to Buffalo, and it was orchestrated through the Farm Bureau. So they're doing great work out there. But one thing they did share, and I don't know if anyone that you can answer this, Ms. O'Toole or someone else, but through the TFAB program, the volunteers at the food shelf shared with us that folks are coming out from as far as Mankato, Roseville, Plymouth, Minneapolis, and they're coming to Montrose, to Buffalo, to Delano, and loading up vanfuls of food. If you're a part of the TFAP program, you can't deny someone's hunger, which makes sense. But at the same token, we've got volunteers in Wright County, and I'm sure you all have volunteers at your own food shelves, that food really should go to feeding the hungry in our districts. When we work and donate our money to help our local food shelf, I don't want people coming in from other cities who have their own food shelves coming in and taking food away from the people in our county. So I don't know what can be done about it, or if it was just a fabrication. I can't believe it was. I'm sure it is, because I've heard it numerous times. But can anyone address that, Ms. O'Toole? Can you address it, or is there someone from our staff that could address that issue? I would imagine people are concerned about that. Maybe you're not. I certainly am in Wright County, that we make sure that the hard work of the volunteers and the money and the food that we do helps first those in our county and those who are in other counties. If they can't, their counties can't help them, then we'd be happy to. But under TFAP, you're a part of that program, which you get federal funds, then you cannot turn down anyone hungry. Sounds good on the surface, but we're because there's a limited amount of food, sometimes we're turning down people in our own hometowns and our districts, and that's not good.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald. We do not administer that program, so I defer to the Department of Children, Youth, and Families on that. If there's anyone here.
And we have somebody approaching.
Thank you, Ms. Toole.
Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, Nick Dem with DCYF. Representative McDonald, you are correct in terms of what the TFAP program regulations say. Food shelves are not allowed to turn people away. They're not allowed to ask for IDs, where they live. They have to serve anyone who is in need and shows their need when they show up at the food shelf. So that is how the federal TFAP regulations currently operate.
Representative McDonald.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, on the surface, that's good. We don't want to turn away people that are hungry, but according to the TFAP and the USDA website, you have to be eligible. And eligibility status has to take into, if they want to be a part of the program and get receive funded federal funding, we do have to follow some of the rules that they have with the monies that they send to our districts. Wouldn't you agree?
Mr. Dim.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's correct. Folks who are served by TFAP do need to meet the eligibility requirements, so they do have to self-report their income. They have to be below 300% of the federal poverty guidelines.
Representative McDonald.
Correct. Yes, but there's the glitch in that program that you can't turn down people. You can't check their IDs and their eligibility status. I just think, and maybe I'm on an island of myself, but I think that we as our own districts would want to protect those constituents and loved ones who are in our district to make sure they get fed and opportunities to get the groceries they need before someone in a different county. Furthermore, there's suggestion that perhaps some of this food is being sold when they leave town. And that we just, as a committee, we can't allow that to happen if we really want to feed our constituents, our friends, our neighbors, our loved ones. Anything to respond on that?
Mr. Dowd.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I certainly appreciate your concerns, and obviously we want to make sure that the folks who are in their communities are being served by the resources in those communities. I would also say we have to follow the federal guidelines. You know, that's a requirement, so there's not a lot that we can do in terms of following the TFAP regulations and what they say about equal access at food shelves.
Representative McDonald.
Lastly, Mr. Chair, thank you. Well, offline, perhaps, if we wanted to get together and talk about this, if it's an issue, if other members think it's important, we certainly can maybe look at something we can do to save our own food shelves in our districts.
Representative Hemingway-Yeager.
Yeah, just kind of as I'm thinking about that, thank you, Chair. Valid concerns. We all want to make sure that our own communities are taken care of. But as I sit back and think about it, too, like, for someone to drive that distance, like, I think it just highlights the need that people are going to these great lengths to get food, and that really just shows what dire need we have and what kind of crisis we have in Minnesota. So my comment.
All right. Mr. Berg.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not trying to correct anyone, but there was a question about the federal dollars for TFAP, and I have a partial answer, which is there is a grant of $3.69 million annually for the storage and distribution cost portion of TFAP only. That does not include the value of the commodities or purchase of commodities. It's just the administrative portion is $3.7 million a year.
Thank you, Mr. Berry.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you for always being proactive. Like, more information is good, I think, so appreciate it. Representative Dunn.
Mr. Chair, just lastly, to Mr. Berg, since he brought that up, and that 3.7 million, was you say 3.9 or 3.7, and that's distributed out to our the counties and the districts, is that correct? Some of it?
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, I would have to check with the department to see exactly how it goes out. I don't know that off the top of my head.
Mr. Dem, we have him right here.
Mr. Chair, since I'm here, the most recent numbers that we have for the federal TFAP resources that we're getting as a state are $5.6 million a year. $1.5 million of that is for storage and distribution, and $4.1 million is to make TFAP food purchases.
Vice Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for this. You might want to stay here. This may be a question for you. I don't know yet. It also may be a question for research, but I don't know that we've really talked a lot about this in this committee. I think we did last session, but I wanted to just put this back on the record today to just have a conversation about the difference between states that have a food bank model only or a food shelf model only, and that we are a hybrid state that does both. And if there was any information that research may have or if the department has about why we do it that way and what was the precipice for this. I think what I've understood of this is that there's obviously the transportation infrastructure that really matters a whole lot of getting that food across the state, and also the negotiations with any kind of bulk food purchases and things like that. So those are kind of the two pieces I understood that why we did a hybrid model here in order to not put those sorts of responsibilities or, I guess, tasks onto shelves, which are tend to have fewer employees and smaller budgets and all of that sort of thing. But I just wanted to see if I had that right and maybe if somebody could say it more eloquently than I to put it on the record. Thank you.
Mr. Dem.
Mr. Chair, Representative, thanks for those comments. I think I would say that, you know, food banks and food shelves kind of serve two critical elements of the emergency food distribution system. They're kind of two pieces of the puzzle. Food banks can purchase large quantities of food and store those large quantities of food, whereas the food shelves are really small, community-based, connected to their local communities. And so they don't have the ability to make those kind of bulk purchases that food banks can make. And so they're kind of leveraging each other to serve the state, if you will. So it's kind of two critical elements of the food system.
Vice Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for that answer. I appreciate that we have kind of some barriers that are in place there. So in light of those barriers that our food shelves face, how do food banks make sure that the food they're getting to food shelves, since food shelves, you know, I don't want to say can't, but it's a barrier to get it themselves. Are they offering a discount on this food? Like, how does that model financially benefit that, as opposed to food shelves building an infrastructure of their own transportation infrastructure and storage infrastructure? Thanks.
Mr. Dem.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think that's a great question. It's a little bit out of my depth in terms of how the food banks operate. If any of the representatives from the food banks want to speak to that, they can certainly come up here and maybe provide a little bit more information, and I would welcome them to do so.
Any interest? all right, we got to take her. Please introduce yourself for the record, and please share with us the valuable information you have.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Zach Rodvold. I'm the Director of Public Affairs at Second Harvest Heartland. And Representative Hansen, to answer your question, for this bill that's before the committee right now, the entirety of the funding would be used to source and distribute food to food shelves at no cost to them. And food banks do their best to do that whenever possible. A lot of the food that we receive is donated food, large-scale donations, corporate donations of food. We do have to purchase food, and especially in light of rising need now. And just like the cost of groceries is impacting family budgets, the cost of food, even at the wholesale level, is impacting food bank budgets. And so this money would put more food into the system at no cost to food shelves than would be without this money.
Somebody else came. You're good? Okay. Vice Chair Hansen.
Thank you, and thank you for that answer. I really appreciate that. I really wanted to just have a full-fledged conversation. I understand what the bill before us today is. I, again, wanted to make sure the whole committee, we're a great bipartisan committee learning a lot together, and so I wanted to get that on the record for us, too. I just also want to be sure that just because our smaller food shelves, who are the core and the glue of our communities, do not have the resources to do something, we do want to make sure that they're getting that directly to them. I love this no-cost model. Hats off to that. That's great. Can we see more of it? I would love to see more of that, not just from you guys. I think just nationally, we need to make sure we're getting that food there as best as we can. And that's all my comments. Thank you.
I would say we are having a full fleshed out conversation on this particular bill. Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative McDonald brought something up that I've heard in my community as well. And maybe it's a question for the department again, but a lot of the food shelves are the ones that people see. They're the ones that people go to, and so much of the donations, so much of the money comes from those local organizations. I happen to be a Lion. We donate about $35,000 a year to our food shelf, and we love that. You know, it comes from our community. 100% of every dollar we raise $150,000 a year in some events, goes into our community. And if my Corcoran Lions members knew that we were feeding, there were people coming from St. Paul, Minneapolis, wherever, and leaving our community with less access, they would be hesitant to participate. Is there no way that, for example, my question, Representative, do you know if the Corcoran, if my Lions group wants to donate food to the food shelf, can they restrict that to people in their community?
Representative Henson-Yeager.
So I will admit that is outside my scope of knowledge, but I don't. The whole purpose of this bill is to get money for a regional food bank system to help with that food relief ecosystem. I'm not aware of that happening in communities, but I really want to be careful that during this conversation that we don't start putting communities against each other and that we just focus on addressing the hunger crisis that we have.
Representative Nadeau.
And thank you, and I appreciate that. And that's not my intent. My intent is to, we look at it, and I had this conversation with with one of the supporters about the way we measure food insecurity. I mean, in Minnesota, we measure food insecurity based on whether or not if you are a SNAP recipient, if you are using a food shelf, you're considered food insecure. I'm not sure if that's how we should be measuring it. That's like saying that people are on our public health programs are health insecure. They're not. Somebody else is paying for it. They're not insecure. And so are we really actually, accurately measuring the impact, number one. But number two, the vast majority, I think, of the donations that are going to our food shelves are local organizations, and they want to make sure they're taking care of their neighbors. I'm not trying to pit, people from St. Louis Park against people from Rogers. I get it. There's this holistic thing, and I appreciate your approach. But if there's, this would just predominantly serve higher densely populated areas rather than, letting communities take care of the people in their community. And I'm learning a little bit how this works. It's very confusing to me. I appreciate it. I do think that there should be, the ability for local communities to take care of the people that live in their community and without losing that. And if your bill theoretically is trying to fill that hole, I'm not sure. But anyway, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hemmingson-Yeager.
Yeah, so just kind of a reminder, too, that our food bank system, there's, six spread throughout the state. So they're, they're out in Fargo, Moorhead. They're down in Rochester. They're not, there are some in, suburbs of the cities, too. But it's not just, we're not just talking about higher density areas. I lost my thought. Okay. But I kind of just want to, again, we're addressing hunger, and I would think any operations that food shelves choose to do, as long as they're meeting their state and federal requirements, when I toured Today's Harvest
open cupboard. Like, they were very proud of that they don't question people, that they just let people come in, get their fresh food, and then they kind of check out. They have, like, their own little self-checkout, and then that's it. So I think that's kind of up to each food shelf and food bank, how they choose to do their operations, as long as they're compliant.
Representative Perez-Vega.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, can you pass some of those high chews down this way? Can you? That way. That's not just my only question here, but yeah, whichever ones is accessible to a type 1 diabetic that is in need of some sugar, not in an emergency, but needs it. Okay.
Happy to.
Representative Hemingsing-Yeager, thank you for addressing this, bringing this up to the table. The same way that I just asked our chair if I could get some accessibility to food that I can eat, should be the same response as what we're doing for whether you're in Greater Minnesota, who I do have a lot of Greater Minnesotans in my district here all the time, lined up around the building just across from the Capitol Complex when we think about the Dorothy Day Center. No one's asking them whether, you know, there is a lot of questions, but if there's a food bank and there's people making food, it's just as accessible for those volunteers, for those that work for the organizations, for those folks that are my constituents that go there to attempt to keep their jobs because the outreach funding is difficult, and we brought that to attention with the SNAP. There's no hesitation. They don't look at your district. They don't look at what town you live in. There's churches that are nonprofit organizations that are 501c3, okay, that have 990s that are reported to us, that are food banks, whether they are right outside of the reservations that I go to and my other work as being an artist, touring or teaching children in those schools who are in deep need, that are writing to us, every member in here, to talk about them needing a meal outside of their breakfast and lunch programming that they're receiving in the schools. So I want to thank you, because accessibility to food isn't just a matter for my district. It's a large matter in my district. I mean, whether you're just across here at Dorothy Day or the neighborhood house in the West Side community where I volunteer at, and you see the programs of Second Harvest, you see organizations like Open Arms that are getting these meals all the way up north to the International Falls or down to Faribault, Fairmount, Rochester. It's about making sure that our Minnesotans are healthy. And if it's about a status or they need this documentation, we should be figuring out how to have accessibility just like the churches do, just like the worship places do, because it's providing a response as to somebody who just handed this over to me right now. Thank you. I'm going to enjoy this haichu, and thank you, Representative, for bringing this subject to matter, because if they need the haichu up in the reservations, if they need the haichus in Hibbing, Minnesota, they need the haichus in Rochester, you know, they need a little bit more comfort, like a soulful meal that they can have around their families, because that's the motion of what makes a good Minnesotan, is that we're providing that type of labor, and it costs money. But I heard a no cost, right, Representative Hansen? On what was presented here. And I think that should give us, as with nonpartisan, bipartisan values, that we should accept that and see how we can get more of those no cost, but give food to our families. No further. Thank you.
I generally discourage the use of props, but high chews are always welcome to be props.
Chair, with all due respect.
Representative.
In the federal law that we still have with the American Disability, okay, I'd like to credit that this wouldn't be an issue.
If it's haichu related, I'm happy. All right. Representative Hemingsing-Yeager, we have reached the end. Okay. Would you like to close out the bill?
Well, thanks again. I really appreciate this robust conversation. One thing I am not turbo lightning about is making sure that we hash through things thoroughly and fully to make sure that this is the most comprehensive, best bill we can make it. So I want to thank you for your time and your comments. Again, this is about a regional food bank grant program. These food banks do an amazing job coordinating, collaborating. You know, when I think about these small food shelves, so I grew up in Wabasha, Minnesota, and it's a small town, 2,500. And just to be able to have some sort of like technical assistance or infrastructure assistance that these food banks can kind of help these smaller food shelves with, I think is kind of an extra service that they do besides the distribution and the transportation. So I don't think anything more needs to be said, but I would greatly appreciate your support and look forward to having it laid over. Thank you.
Representative Hennington-Yeager renews her motion that House File 1112 be laid over for possible inclusion in a later omnibus bill. And thank you for your patience, Representative Sensimura. I know you're getting that tested every day, or at least that's how my little girl is. Are you offended she didn't bring it over? Just get over here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good to see you.
And I'm not a voting member, so do you want to move the bill?
Oh, yeah. Huh. I must continue my iron-fisted rule. Do you want to move your members' bill? Or I'll move the House File 1098 be laid over for possible inclusion in a later omnibus bill. Representative Sensimura, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members, for the robust discussion today. You know, I think kind of to bridge from the discussion that we were just having to this bill, 1098, you know, I know that when I came into the House last biennium, I was found it really enriching to hear about the work of the, I believe it was the Ending Homelessness Division, kind of the subcommittee in the prior biennium that had done a lot of work on looking at homelessness, ending homelessness across our state. And I know that one of the things, kind of one of the major takeaways from that work was really looking at where are the resources for dealing with homelessness, kind of where they distributed across our state, and then how does that kind of relate to patterns of where people are going for services. And one of the things that that committee found was that a lot of services are really, what's the word I'm looking for, concentrated in the metro area. And so we did work with, through our shelter capital grants or other things to try to build out some of that infrastructure across Minnesota. And so when we look at where people are going to access services, we know that people would most likely want to get those services in their home community. We know that it is best for people to be able to access services in their home community. If someone is driving 2 hours, that's not ideal for them. And so this bill works to ensure that food shelves across our state are getting funding and support to continue to build out their food shelf infrastructure. So one of the kind of limiting factors that food shelves are facing right now is that they may be offered food that they are not able to take because they don't have the facilities for it, whether that is fridges, whether that is space. And so when we think about how do we meet people where they were there at with the resources that they need, knowing that there are more food shelf visits now than there are before and knowing that we probably expect those visits to only increase, we did some good work last session in terms of giving out grants. We gave out there's an application process through DCYF. It was highly competitive, over $52 million in financial requests. And we gave out $7 million. So just to kind of give the committee a sense of what the need was, again, there was a request for $52 million in terms of food shelf infrastructure. We gave out $7 million. We gave out grants to two tribal nations, 8 nonprofit organizations, 3 local units of government. I believe that in your packet there should be a map of that so you can see kind of the distribution was across Minnesota. The grantees facility projects were different. You know, they included installing running water, expanding space, redesign, acquiring new space, upgrading heating, ventilation, air conditioning, installing walk-in coolers. So this looks to expand on that work. You will see a blank appropriation. We know that we are going to be going through a target and budgeting process, but want to uplift this need. You know, just giving funding for the ongoing operations of our food shelves is really important, but also how can we help them build up the infrastructure so that they can serve more people, so that maybe they can serve more people in their home communities. And with that, would love to turn it over to my testifiers.
All right, first on the list is Daisy De Leon Esqueda. Unfortunately, we're almost out of time, so we're going to do a hard 2 minutes, whereas usually I was like 2 minutes and 30 seconds-ish for the other testifiers, but just so we can get to member discussion, if it's anything like the last bill.
Thank you.
Please introduce yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Hi, my name is Daisy De Leon Esqueda. I'm the manager at Emergency Community Help Organization, also known as ECHO, which is located in Mankato. ECHO has been operating at capacity for the past couple of years. We are only able to store about a week's worth of food in our 10,000 square foot facility. As a result, we're turning needed food donations away. In 1 year, we turned 150 pallets away. This was the equivalent of $465,000 that we could have used. When we found out that there was funding available for the infrastructure, we were excited, and we knew that we could apply, and this would help us provide better services for our clients. Unfortunately, we did not receive the funding, along with 102 other food shelves around the state. So we kept chugging along. We broke records, and breaking records for food shelves is not really a good thing. So last year, we provided 2.4 million pounds of food to our constituents. It's been a blur, but sometime along the line, we went from rarely serving over 100 households to now our average being 130 households each day. This is about 500 clients that are being served at ECHO each weekday. Because ECHO is located near large grocery stores and a Walmart distribution center, we have the ability to accept or access undeliverable or rejected food from semi-trucks. This means that there are semi-trucks in our community that cannot go to their next destination because there's food in their tractors. And because Blue Earth County has one of the highest poverty rates, we're trying to be resourceful. We're trying to use the resources that are in our community. So for us, expanding is a no-brainer. This means that we can take those donations that have nowhere to go, that are currently ending in landfills, and use them to feed our neighbors. A larger space will allow us to decrease food waste. It will decrease our food cost. It will also increase the ability for us to accept larger donations of dairy, frozen, and fresh produce. It will also allow us to provide healthier food options to our clients and increase the wellness of our neighbors. Not only this, but because we partner with other hunger-fighting agencies, we sub-distribute. So that means that we share anything that we have in excess with these smaller food shelves that are not able to take these donations, and we're able to pass these benefits down to them. Bill, House File 1098, can not only benefit ECHO, but it can also benefit other food shelves and Minnesotans across the state. So I really do hope that you consider this and that it moves forward.
Thank you for your testimony. Next on the list is Jamie Dalichuk.
Don't worry, nobody gets my name right. My name is Jamie Dalichuk, and I am the president of Community Emergency Service, located in the Phillips neighborhood. I had a 30-year career as a senior executive in Cargill, and I volunteered with food shelves, and I ended up deciding to leave, and now I spend my full time acting as president for CES. For those who don't know, CES has been around for 55 years. We are one of the largest food shelves in one of the poorest neighborhoods of the Twin Cities. We are operating out of the Phillips neighborhood. Today, I operate a food shelf which serves upwards of 500 people per day. I'm one of the largest Meals on Wheels provider in the state. We provide about 425 meals per day. And I also operate a program called Anna Meals, which is the only program in the state of Minnesota that provides free pet food and veterinarian services to people that are at risk and in need. And my staff will often say to me, it's not about the pets, it's about the people. This year alone, CES has literally doubled the amount of people that we serve in the Phillips neighborhood. Our neighbors are amongst the most diverse in the state. 90% identify as BIPOC. 65% of the people that come to my food shelf are single mothers, and 40% of the people that I serve are children. It's really heartbreaking. And so every day we serve upwards of 1,000 people across our programs. Our people are hardworking people. They simply cannot make ends meet, as other people have said. And so we have tried to, as much as possible, contemplate the increasing need that we see and continue to see with all sorts of adjustments to the programs that we offer. We're the first people in the area that have offered now an appointment system. So rather than a flood of literally hundreds of people coming to my food shelf every morning, people would wait for 5 or 6 hours a day, literally, and often would be turned away. I now have an appointment system. We're the only ones in the Phillips neighborhood that does that. And then about 3 months ago, with the help of Second Harvest, I introduced the very first refrigerated food lockers, not only in the state of Minnesota, but in the Midwest. And the food lockers are designed to give access to people, particularly single mothers, food in off hours. And so they can pick up food any time of the day or night, 24/7. We started them up 3 months ago. I'm going to be at full capacity by the end of this month. We did apply for funding under the PASS grant. We were also not successful. But my organization, it not only missed out, but we have a critical need to expand. I have refrigerators, I have equipment in my location that are literally from 1960s.
If you could please wrap up your testimony.
Okay, thank you. People will not repair it anymore. And so we really, really appreciate you considering this this bill, because the people in our neighborhood are in so much in need. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dolichek. Now we have part two from Jessica Francis. Please introduce yourself and begin your two-minute testimony.
All right, great. Committee Chair West and House Committee members, again, my name is Jessica Francis, and I'm the Executive Director of Open Cupboard Food Shelf in Oakdale and Maplewood. I'm glad to be here with Representative Spencer Mura today and have the opportunity to let you know about the infrastructure grants for food shelves. Open Cupboard was fortunate enough to be one of the 13 agencies that received a capital infrastructure grant in the 2023 legislative session, and the impact of that grant was transformative. We were approved for funding in early 2024, and that helped us renovate space to open a new location in Maplewood. The space we had leased had been a grocery store many years before that, but it had been vacant for decades, and it required substantial renovation to get it ready to serve the community. Our service had grown more than 1,000% between 2020 and 2023, and we were bursting at the seams at our Oakdale location. We needed this to open the second site, and more importantly, the community needed it. And we wouldn't have been able to do it without the funding that we received. In December of last year, we opened our Today's Harvest Maplewood site, and we're now serving more than 3,000 households each week through that site alone. As the need continues to rise, our service levels are continuing to grow every month, and thanks to the infrastructure grant that we received, we are ready to meet the need. I'd like to invite all of you to come and visit our Today's Harvest Maplewood site and see the impact of that infrastructure grant in action. I know that there are many, many food shelves across the state that are facing the same challenges and the same pressure. We've been hearing about that today. Every week, we at Open Cupboard are seeing hundreds of new faces, people stepping through the door for the very first time because they simply cannot afford the fresh and healthy food that they need for their families. So this infrastructure funding will play an essential role for the state support of our collective work. And it truly is collective work across the food shelves and food banks and all of the agencies supporting us to make sure that Minnesotans have the access to the fresh and healthy food that they need to thrive. So I thank you very much for your consideration of this bill.
Thank you for your testimony. We have two members, and then Representative Spencer Mura can close. So Vice Chair Hansen, to you. Oh, we have one member. I lied. Representative Hemmingson-Yeager. I know you're good for it.
Thanks. Just want to put out a second plug again. What they did at today's Harvest in Maplewood is really cool. Like, you walk in and, like, you feel like you're in a grocery store, so it kind of gets rid of some of that stigma too. And it was innovative because they had a board member or a volunteer, like, went to Australia and, like, saw how they're doing things there and, like, brought it back here. So just really proud of them in our community.
Chair Katizawatun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Sensenmiera, for bringing this bill forward. All of these bills are super important. We know that the need is greater than ever, and that the food shelves, in partnership with the food banks, are doing the hard work of making sure that people's bellies are full when they lay down for bed at night. But this bill in particular is one that I know would help my local food shelf. Former Representative Jennifer Loon is the executive director, and so I toured in January, and they're bursting at the seams. And I think to some of the previous comments about whether or not you can ask folks for identification, I think, you know, to the extent that there are people who aren't being able to get what they need in their local area, I think, you know, food banks can allow them to continue serving in their community instead of potentially having to shut their doors if they're not getting the donations that they need locally to be able to bring that food to the folks who need it. So I think what your comments were earlier just about being able to expand and provide some of that locally is best case scenario, right? I mean, that's kind of all what we hope, so that people don't have to travel to get what they need. And I think that one of the things that's really important is that, you know, when we look at sort of, right, the world of excess that we live in and the amount of waste that's created and the amount of packaging and junk and just all of this, it's more in this consumeristic society. I think that we really have to sometimes take a good hard look and say, when we have more than we need, build a longer table and not a higher fence, because everybody deserves to sit at that table and everybody deserves to have full bellies when they go to bed at night. And I think that we just have to make sure that we're doing everything that we can here at the state level with our federal partners, that we're not cutting social safety net programming that people who depend on it literally to live in the name of tax cuts for the uber wealthy. I think this discussion is very worthy of that. It's a huge part of the problem of what's happening and making sure that everybody has access to the things that they need. So I appreciate you letting me make closing comments to all the bills on your bill, but I appreciate your time.
Representative Sensenmiera.
Thank you. I'll just close by saying, you know, we waste so much food in our country, as Chair Katizawatun said. You know, I would like to change our economic structure so that we don't have people that are going hungry. But in the meantime, I think this is a good stopgap measure to ensure that if we have food, it doesn't go to waste. It can go to people that are hungry. Thank you.
Thank you. And I'll renew my motion that House File 1098 will be laid over for possible inclusion in a later omnibus bill. And that, committee members, ends my iron-fisted rule of the committee. We will now move to power sharing next week, but I will chair Tuesday. So, see you then. Committee's adjourned.